You know why I like Jim Benya? Because he applies his knowledge in the real world. Get a grip on lighting caught up with him back in July at the DLC's annual stakeholders meeting. We saved this one for you guys because we felt like you were getting a little DLC'd out. Plus, we needed someone of stature to follow the Godfather Bill Brown. Jim Benya's up for that. He ain't backing down from anybody in this business. I dusted this one off last week and got a little bit into his bio, and it's ridiculous. Winner of the 2008 Edison Award and over 200 national and international lighting design awards. How many do I got? I got Straightest Drive at the 2009 National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors Convention, but I don't know if that counts. Come on, man. 16 completed LEED Platinum projects. He was on the design team of the world's only double platinum LEED and WELL project. Winner of four International Environmental Design Awards. Fellow of the International Association of Lighting Designers. Sustaining member and fellow of the Illuminating Engineering Society of North America. Professional engineer. Jim Benya is ballin', baby. Flat out one of the world's top authorities on lighting design and applied illuminating engineering. Ooh, sounds fancy. He's especially known for his work in the field of design with a hardcore emphasis on daylighting, lighting efficiency, and sustainable design. Guess what, lighting peeps? This podcast is sponsored by Bill Brown Sales. Do you manufacture light fixtures? Do you? Do you need lighting components? Well, since 1955, that's 62 years, man. BBS has been the one call does it all component supplier for lighting manufacturers. It wasn't until I started to research how I was going to write this ad copy. Now think about it, I just interviewed this guy on my podcast. It wasn't until I started to research the ad copy that I began to understand the scope of Bill Brown Sales. This company is ridiculous. They serve every market, every niche. It's hard for a small Canadian lighting distributor like me to really understand it. Take ALP Lighting Components, for example, just one of the companies they represent. Go to the website, click on the markets link. General lighting, automotive, medical, marine, transportation, and aerospace. Land, sea, and air, baby. Whether you're moving at 500 miles an hour in an airplane cabin, sitting on a cruise ship in the Mediterranean, pulling up to a stoplight in your car in Philadelphia. Well, hey, at that stoplight, Bill Brown could be the lights in your dash, the headlights, the roadway lighting, and the stoplight. For true, bro. They ain't lying when they say one call does it all. And that's just ALP Lighting Components, man. Forget about Atom Metal Products, BrightView Technologies, Genesis Plastics Technologies, Intermatics, Inventronics, IR Tech, LTL, Link Labs, Roytec Industries, Tripar, and Wire Made USA. They're all on the Bill Brown sales card. If you need lighting components, you got to go to BillBrownSales.com. That's BillBrownSales.com or call 1-800-621-1348. That's 1-800-621-1348. Don't forget, man, this is the official podcast of Nailed. Friend of mine, Randy Johnson, is putting together a webinar. He's a super smart dude, by the way. It's called LED Trends and Applications, Interior, Exterior, and Controls. It's on December 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You should check it out, or get your peeps to check it out. It's free to Nailed members, but if you're a non-member, you can get in on the action for $50, or you could just join Nailed. Might be better for you. Go to naild.org, nailed.org. Hover over the education and resources link and click Illuminate You. I'll also put a link to this directly on the site of this podcast page. So you can go to getagriponlighting.com. That's always good. So without further ado, and brought to you by the one call does it all, Bill Brown Sales. we give you Jim Benya on episode 11 of the Get a Grip on Learning podcast. Click. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Learning podcast, Jim.
Thank you.
Say hi to my co-host, Greg Eric.
Yep. Jim, how are you doing?
Good.
All right. So how are you? Good. We're at the annual stakeholders meeting for the Design Lights Consortium, and we're here to talk about, you know, the future of the business, Jim. What were you presenting for the crew this morning?
Nothing. I serve on DLC's advisory council, and it's a volunteer thing that I do. I kind of think it's important that those of us who can contribute to this sort of thing do contribute to it. It's sort of like IES and other things. I see DLC as, in many ways, stepping into a void of the industry. Not necessarily a bad thing, not necessarily somebody's fault. It's just that there came a need for someone to step in and fill this void of what amounts to a UL listing for energy efficiency.
Do you, have they served their purpose then? Is it over?
Oh my goodness. DLC has filled such an important void that it's really hard to imagine a world today without something like it. Mm. And it's not going to go away real fast.
What's your history in this business, John?
I'm an electrical engineer. I work primarily in the field of illumination as a lighting designer, illuminating engineer. I've been in the business 44 years. So it's I started working in this business before there was an energy crisis. Mm. My first fall working as an engineer was when the first energy crisis happened, and that's when our world changed.
Is that the late 70s?
Well, no, it was 1973.
So I was a twinkle in my father's eye. So do you feel like that advisory committee is missing some players in the business and that there needs to be different voices in that committee, maybe from distribution?
I think distribution could be more strongly represented, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the people that you could talk to, I see two of them standing right over there.
She's coming on the show soon, don't worry. She's after you.
Okay. Tina, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, these are the people. They are very smart. One of the things I want to say, I don't have to say this because they don't pay me or anything, but DLC has been brilliantly organized and managed. You know, it really started off in the late 1990s, as most of these programs do. The utility industry is being pressured by government agencies or the regulators to make things more energy efficient. Lighting has always been the lowest hanging fruit on the tree of energy efficiency, always.
It's the most easily adopted energy efficient measure. Mm-hmm. Like HVAC is more difficult, solar panels are more difficult. Lighting is the easiest, for
it's
sure.
It's easiest to see, too. Yeah, it's sure. Real obvious. So because of that one thing, the original idea for DLC, which was nothing more than a mission of the utilities in the Northeast U.S. and NEEP, the Northeast Energy Efficiency Partnership back then, they said, we're going to create this consortium, or this thing called Design Lights Consortium, and we're going to teach people how to design energy efficient lighting. And I was actually a contractor for them back in the first effort, which was to produce an educational manual. Here's how to design energy efficient lighting. And throughout the early 2000s, they continued to provide that sort of educational message and getting people together to talk about it. Then they started seeing this big void. Utility companies, and what really happened, the truth is, utility companies started laying off and getting rid of all their technical experts and employees. When the lighting experts and the people in utility companies hit retirement age, they let them retire and they never replaced them. So all of a sudden, utilities are no longer manned by knowledgeable people. Utilities are being run by a lot of accountants.
Yeah. Bean counters.
Bean counters. Right. And so they need expertise. How are they going to get expertise? How are we going to know that lighting fixture right over there should get an incentive? All right. How are we going to make sure we're making the right decision and not handing out money for garbage?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know where to turn. DLC went, we can fix that problem. And at first, there was actually several agencies doing this. This was being done up in Seattle. Seattle City Light had a list of this kind, and DLC had one going. Mm. But DLC was the only one with the really exceptional and independent management. I mean, at that time, it was still part of NEEP, but DLC was given enough rope, enough opportunity to literally lead itself into what is now an independent nonprofit.
Do you, you got something?
No, yeah, I was going to say, Jim, you're really strong in the control side of the business, and what do you think of this new program through DLC with controls?
Well, I think the DLC controls program is excellent. I've been involved in developing lighting energy codes from the very beginning. I've been involved in 90.1, Title 24, and pretty much every descendant from those codes. And putting controls into the codes is a very important step, because if you look at, and just give you a little history.
And you're talking about municipal codes and building codes.
No,
and stuff
state,
like
codes.
That. State codes.
They're pretty much state codes. So when you look at the history, when we were, before energy efficiency was ever an issue, we designed office buildings at four to six watts a square foot of power density,
sure. Yep.
And no controls. And when, now we're at 0.4 yeah. watts per square foot, and controls are saving 75% of the time. So we're running at 95 to 98% less energy use in lighting than when it all started. No other building energy use is anywhere as close. No other energy use.
Yeah, lighting is ridiculous.
Lighting is ridiculously great. But that said,
like HVAC, you cannot accomplish that with cooling and heating. You can't accomplish those kinds of efficiency gains.
You're right.
If you got 30%, you're really rocking and rolling on HVAC.
I would agree. I think we could do better though.
Oh, yeah.
I think we haven't invested in HVAC as well as we've invested in lighting. People can't see it.
Yeah, that's true.
Where is that fan motor? Who cares?
So how do you think DLC is going to be able to easily, because what a big part of their job is to qualify products or set aside characteristics. How do you do that with controls?
Well, the network lighting controls is a phenomenal start in doing this. See, if we look at individual devices, let's say a time clock or a dimmer or something like that, industry pretty well takes care of that, and the energy codes have embraced those. Where the energy codes are really weak is in integrated solutions.
About daylight harvesting and stuff like this?
Yeah, well, daylight harvesting and demand response.
And demand response.
And institutional tuning.
Is demand response really going to be an effective part of the mix in this?
In the future, it's going to evolve. It's going to become grid stability.
So lighting controls are going to drive that demand response capability in the end user client?
The grid stability aspect of it. Because you know what they're saying in the future, if you work enough with photovoltaics, and for example, I have 3.2 kilowatts of photovoltaics on my roof.
Okay.
Right? And I'm looking at how much when we use it and when we sell it back, supposedly, or trade it back.
There's a net metering or whatever?
Yeah, it's net zero is our target, but we're not anywhere as close yet. We need some more panels. But the point is that pretty soon the utilities are going to get to the point where the amount of sustainable energy that's going to be going into the grid is going to exceed the grid's demand. Mm-hmm. What do you do with it then?
Well, I also read an article about so I live on a farm, okay?
Yeah.
And my farm has a very good wind source. I put one of these wind things on my roof, mm-hmm. and it told me that I have enough miles per hour to generate a good wind system or whatever, right? And when I was just talking to a guy, and he goes, you know what the biggest problem is? As people start to deploy these localized energy generation systems on their properties or their farms or whatever, there's going to be less of a base to cover the maintenance of the infrastructure.
So it's a serious issue for utilities, because as people exit buying their kilowatts and kilowatt hours from the utilities, those demand charges leave, and the utility is left without the cash they need to fix the poles and the wires and the transformers and all this stuff. It's a real issue.
It's a huge issue. And the reason why I say grid stability is because I think we're going to see a series of very significant changes in the marketplace, in the utility industry. You know, we have two monstrous utilities in California, Pacific Gas and Electric and Southern California Edison. And San Diego Gas and Electric's no slouch either, and Sacramento Municipal Utility District is no slouch. These are all fairly big utilities, but PG&E and SCE are huge. And they are struggling to reorganize to get ready for this. And it's causing a lot of political issues, a lot of tension throughout the state. Looking at it technically, which is what the Energy Commission is responsible for, the Energy Commission has got to be looking forward to how do we deal with all this from an energy codes point of view. No question, controls are going to be the number one thing that are going to be forced into this marketplace, network lighting controls in particular, because we're going to have smarts. We're going to have the ability to say, let's turn the lights all up full in the middle of a sunny afternoon because there's too much excess capacity on the grid.
But how is DLC going to fit into that picture? The control turns it on or off. It dims it up or down.
It harvests the daylight and lowers something.
So how do you qualify one as DLC and one as not?
Same way we're dealing with DLC today, I think. Take an industrial luminaire or a streetlight luminaire or a downlight or just about anything that's out there today that someone might use. They can use anything they want, but if they want to get the incentive from the utility, the rebate, whatever you want to call it, they better use one that's DLC listed. What I see is the evolution of DLC's standards into codes in some cases. Not in all cases, but in some cases. This is the void the DLC originally filled, and this is the void that they're going to fill, I think, with lighting controls. They are so far ahead in terms of standardizing lighting controls.
Do we want to standardize them, though?
We have to standardize them.
They mean the intricate, you mean how they speak to one another, the software?
I don't know how deep it's got to go. It could be simply that they can talk to one another because there's a common language or common protocols. Or it could be very, very deep. It could get down to literally the interoperability or even lower into interchangeability. In other words, I can buy, you want to buy an incandescent type light bulb, whether it's incandescent or LED, it still always fits in the same socket and it always works, and you don't need to think about anything more than that. And LEDs have made it a little complicated because maybe your incandescent dimmer doesn't work so well with your LED replacement lamp. But what's going to happen is that we have got to make buildings buildable, maintainable, manageable, understandable, and affordable to everybody.
That's impossible.
Well,
that's impossible what you just said. I'm just being sarcastic here, but I think that's a huge goal.
Well,
that's a moonshot.
And actually, I think you're probably righter than I am, because that is one of the challenges of buildings and where we go with them. In our future. I appreciate your comments about HVAC. To a certain extent, HVAC has done a better job, and to a certain extent, it's done a really worse job. ASHRAE provides an organizing of the industry that lighting doesn't have. Okay? Mm-hmm. ASHRAE is such a powerful organization and has been so dominated by some very, very big companies who throw a lot of resources, money, and everything else at making it all work, that ASHRAE has been able to keep a lid on what happens in the HVAC world. It hasn't happened in lighting.
Is it going to happen?
The lid blew off. That's what happened in lighting.
Well,
the LED revolution.
Yeah,
it blew off, so now is it going to come back in, and is DLC going to be the...
DLC's going to put the lid on?
ASHRAE.
No, one of my concerns is ASHRAE and IES work together, and ASHRAE's strength, and ASHRAE's an incredibly well-organized industry player, and they carry things out in a very thorough and a very professional manner. I've served on ASHRAE committees. It's a very good experience. The problem is that we are different worlds. Light is extremely variable. And HVAC is extremely narrow, relatively speaking.
Sure. Lighting's a far more diverse environment.
Totally diverse. So getting back to your initial question, because I know we want to make sure we talk about
that.
We're good for time. Yeah. What I see happening is DLC will either serve as the de facto standard, okay, or it will become adopted and formalized, maybe by another organization.
Sure.
I could see it becoming part of, either a UL standard, I could see it becoming part of a NEMA standard, or I could see it becoming part of maybe some standard we haven't thought of yet. But ultimately, its requirements end up in code. When code says, okay, you have to do this sort of thing, whatever it happens to be, then everybody races in the same direction.
Sure.
When we get everybody racing in the same direction, then we start getting interoperability, interchangeability, and they will be asking for standards.
But they can't push those codes into the built environment. If the environment's already built, so building codes are for new buildings.
Not 100% true.
Okay.
Certainly in California, that is not true.
Okay.
In California, there's a section of Title 24, Part 6, which is the energy efficiency standards, Section 141.0. 141 is all about renovations, alterations, etc. And historically, it's been held that if you want to do a lighting retrofit, you just want to change the bulbs and ballasts and stuff like that, you didn't have to worry about it. Okay, you just did it.
You just brought in a contractor.
Now you have to get a permit, and you have to follow some pretty strict rules.
Is that red tape or is it positive?
It's depends upon who you talk to. It's been very political. You know, there's
sure.
the people who are used to do the, you know, they come in the building, they put in the tubular LED lamps, and they walk out, and you're done.
Yeah.
What the code says, you can't stop there. If you come in, you have to put in controls.
So
you have to bring the controls up to at least some semblance.
I don't know if I like that. That's interfering in my game.
Right, because lighting is variable and you need to be able to keep that. And, you know, one of the things with the California code, for example, is you have to have integrated LED fixtures. You can't have replaceable.
Modular.
I mean,
that's going to change.
That's going to change now.
That should change.
That's going to change.
So DLC, though, let me ask you a little bit about DLC, if you don't mind. Do you find that, I don't know what the right word is here, Greg, do you find that there's a little bit of resentment from other organizations that are traditionally lighting organizations to the DLC? Like there's a little bit of, you know, maybe they don't like the amount of power the DLC has now in this business?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
I've seen quite a bit of
carping about the DLC.
What's the most popular carp that you hear?
The cost of listing products.
Okay.
And I know DLC is extremely aware of this and works very hard to keep the cost down. That's been a constant driver of DLC's activities.
Do they need a competitor?
Well, competition did an awful lot to release UL's
grip
on the lighting industry, didn't it?
Yep.
And so I suspect it would. But the problem is that what happened was a sequence of events. UL realized it had a grip, and so they decided to become a for-profit company. When they decided to become a for-profit company, all of a sudden the cost of the UL listings went through the roof. Other companies said, geez, we can beat them at that game. And the code was always open to there being other listing companies. So Intertech and all the others stepped into the void and said, you know, we can provide an acceptable service. And then, of course, the idea of national accredited laboratories then came to be, everything happened. I could see a similar process happening here. You know, but because DLC is presently nonprofit, I think DLC's people are going to find out it's not that easy. The other thing, remember, DLC.
Do you think
has,
it was easier for Intertech and ETL to move into that space?
Yeah, because UL still writes the standards.
Okay.
They didn't have to write the standards. All they had to do was do the testing.
Right.
And then they developed enough of a base.
But isn't that the same thing here? Couldn't you just do the testing and call it CLD?
Presumably. Presumably. And I don't want to necessarily encourage or discourage anybody.
No.
This is far from my expertise.
Right.
But, you know, I see no reason why that couldn't happen. But it's, you got to remember, it's a lot of work.
Mm.
And, you know, the testing and listing process, remember, the tests are still done by those independent laboratories. So, or by a certified in-house laboratory. This is where the big companies have the huge advantage. So, excuse me, so when the... when the process is started by a manufacturer to get listed, they got to spend money to get the tests done, and that's one of their gripes. How many tests do I have to do over and over again? And that's one of their big gripes. Once it goes to DLC, it goes through the listing process is more or less verifying the accuracy of the information. There's a lot of people out there cheating on trying to get on the DLC list.
And how does that cheating happen?
Well, a manufacturer will take, you know, his competitor's information, change all the numbers to match his own, and submit it as if it was his. Never do any testing. Just send in the reports, and, you know, for a product you know complies, even though it isn't your product, and that's not what you're selling. And I do know a little bit about the DLC process, and DNR International has been the company that's been doing the legwork on this for a number of years. And, you know, the numbers are frightening at how much information is submitted that's not honest.
Now, one of the reasons we had you on at the beginning when I talked to you was about controls and how distributors can implement that more into their everyday business.
We keep getting off that
track. Yeah, no, sorry, it's my fault.
He gets excited about the DLC, which we're here, and that makes sense. But I do want to dig into that a little bit. And on the control side, a lot of what distributors do are existing buildings. New, it makes all the sense in the world. But now we've done a building and we've retrofitted it and it's energy efficient. How does it make sense to go back and control it?
Or does it make sense?
Well, it's going to be tough for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, with one of the programs this morning, folks were talking about analytics, collecting data. There's a lot of talk about big data and analytics these days. You know, it's like if you have trillions of bytes of information, you're going to learn something.
Not always.
Well, you know, for example, in exterior lighting, which is another, you know, growing area these days, at least one major controls company is teaming up with IBM to use Watson as an artificial intelligence platform to figure out what to do with all this data. So people are taking this very, very seriously. I think they may be taking it too seriously. The proof to me is not that obvious yet. Is this?
I think the energy cost got to be 3 times higher to go into the built environment that's already LED ready and put controls in it.
Maybe, maybe not.
No.
No, because, you know, the Internet of Things is the promise to make all this cheap and easy.
And hackable.
Well, there's the problem. You know, there's the Internet of Things, the IoT Ready Initiative. There's a table right over there about it. The IoT Ready Initiative is to organize the industry so that it won't be hackable, so that it will be somewhat standardized. Two good things, okay? And I think that there's a chance that that alone could be the magic elixir that makes this possible. If you could do nothing more, for example, let's say you buy a luminaire, right? That luminaire comes with a driver. And that driver happens to have a chip in it that can talk to other things as long as you plug in some little module. It is like a Bluetooth type of, you've seen a little Bluetooth module.
Something wireless then.
And so all of a sudden you now start a network. What if it were that simple? What if it were that well organized that you could buy a standard one put it in a little box, set its address, plug it into the driver. Now you're talking to it. And it's a mesh network.
This is going to take coordination across supply chains across the world.
Yeah. But if it did, that's what I think is going to be the long-term opportunity.
Okay.
I think for the, you know, I've worked with people in NAILD. I've spoken at the national conference. NAILD to me is a great organization that provides a tremendously good, useful service. And I know that a lot of NAILD members and their customers are the retrofit companies that want to go in and put in the bulbs and get out, you know, get off, and probably start choking when they hear that, you know, California is going to require a lot of those projects to get permits. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they can't get the permits. They're not prohibited from getting the permits.
Sure.
They're just going to have to do a few administrative things. It's going to raise the costs. The big complaint about it is it will drive up costs. But when you start putting in controls, then it really can drive up the cost. And that's something to worry about. The corollary to it is, I think we're right around the corner.
So you think it's time for distributors to jump into this? Now?
Absolutely. Right now, because I think we're right around the corner from there being easily installed, doesn't need an electrician to rewire the building, lighting controls, mesh networks and things. The only reasons why they're not readily available right now is because the market's very, very small. If the retrofit marketplace comes in and makes it very, very large, the price is going to go through the floor.
It's going to go through the floor. I like that.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
They will be big business for NAILD and anybody else who wants to get into lighting controls. I think NAILD could be the leader.
Well, we got a little educational program going, LS Controls.
Yep.
Go to NAILD.org.
Yep.
But yeah, you know what? I think a lot of distributors, Jim, are nervous about controls. I know I am.
Yeah, and a lot of what you hear is, well, let's get the sale, and now they talk controls, and then that just muddies the waters and makes it harder to get the sale sometimes.
Yeah, Randy said that.
Yep, to the point where you just say, well, maybe it's better not even to
offer them. Like, I mean, I kind of coach people to avoid offering them sometimes because it complicates the installation, the incentive application, and then it complicates, like, if you're taking out a high bay and you're putting in a high bay, bam, bam, you're done. Whereas if now you got controls up there and you got to calibrate it and it's coming on, and when the other rack aisle, you got to go back and fix it. There's
figure
a lot of stuff going
circuited
on with controls. You need to know to do it right.
Absolutely. In California, there's a certified lighting controls acceptance testing technician.
Bam.
CLCATT, or we call them Cool Cats.
Cool Cats.
CLCATT, Cool Cats.
Yeah.
And the Cool Cat is a state certified person who goes in and determines whether the lighting controls are set up correctly and everything else.
And this is a licensed position? Like it's a license, like electrical license or control license? Interesting.
So the process, I think, has got to be a little bit more liberal than it is right now.
Yeah.
But in general, what it's going to do, I think, is as it becomes more prominent, more accepted, and frankly, more commonplace, we're going to see every retrofit project is probably going to have some sort of mesh network that's going to come with the installation. And if we're really smart, smart companies are going to develop these products designed specifically for the retrofit industry.
Controls are already interchangeable for me. When we do a controls job, I don't care what the brand is. It's the guy that's commissioning the controls that matters most for me.
Well, and then it's going to be standardized enough so that a standard piece of software running on an iPad or something like that, or a PC, whatever you want to use, commissions in a standard way. There's a standard protocol. It spits out a certification number. You move on.
Yeah.
Getting rid of paperwork, getting down to a digital environment. We have to do all these things.
How does this benefit the end user? What does he get from it?
Well, what the end user gets significant energy savings over and above what they could have gotten any other way. And they get the data that will help them do a better job.
And it simplifies the process for us and helps us sell more.
And frankly, could allow all of this to be done. You know, one of the great battles is who is allowed to do the work. This is work that's got to be done by a lighting maintenance electrician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have that standard. Like we were talking to the Ontario, who's got the Board of Trades and Licenses or something like that. And we were talking to the lady there, and we're saying, you guys need like a lighting technician certification. Not someone doesn't have to be a full-blown electrician to change ballast, but he's more specialized in maintaining lighting. So he does a little bit of tertiary electrical work, but he's not pulling pipe and wire and hooking up breakers, right? I think there needs to be broadened, and I don't know if it's an industry thing or if it's, do you think it should be right in the jurisdictional, the province of Ontario, the state of California should govern that?
Well, yeah, each state has it. This is falls within the regulations of every state or every province.
But it needs to be cross state, because a guy living in Arizona needs to work as a lighting technician in Minnesota if he wants to. He shouldn't have to take another test.
Well, you know, it's the same. It would be the same qualifications as for electricians or engineers or anything else. Yeah. I'm a professional engineer, and if I want to work in Arizona, I got to go get registered in Arizona.
Right.
Now, I don't necessarily have to take the test,
right?
But I have to pay the fee, and I have to swear that
so
I'm not going to
screw up.
There's
a Professional Engineers Society of Arizona.
So you want to get rid of all the state lines and just have one big country?
I don't even get why there's a border between Canada and the United States, to be honest with you. Like, what's the difference between driving from Minneapolis to Winnipeg or Minneapolis to Milwaukee? Like, there's no difference, really.
Bill Brown Sales. The one call does it all. Lighting component supplier. He's got a lot of different companies under that mix. We're talking ALP Lighting Components, Atom Metal Products, Brightview Technologies, Genesis Plastics Technologies, Intermatics, Inventronics, IRTech, LTL, Link Labs, Roytech Industries, Tripar, and Wiremade USA. Go to BillBrownSales.com. BillBrownSales.com. Call 1-800-621-1348. Check it out. If you manufacture light fixtures or you need lighting components, man, you got to get in with Bill Brown. He's rolling things. It's the official podcast of Nailed. Visit NAILD.org. That's Nailed.org. Join Nailed. Come on. I'd like to thank Jim Benya. You laid it out there, buddy. You're the balm. Thank you for coming on the show. Episode 11. Get a grip on lighting, folks.